History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.
Years ago, the Affordable Care Act transformed American healthcare. This is personal for me because I'm a cancer survivor, and 9 years ago, Obamacare saved my life. In this episode of Care Talk, Ann Schaup at Protect Our Care breaks down the victories and the relentless assault on the Affordable Care Act. What's happening, who's responsible, and what you can do to fight back. Welcome to Care Talk Live, a weekly American healthcare policy show and podcast where we explain how healthcare works or doesn't work and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. Today, we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, 16 years strong but under attack as more Americans are priced out of care. Welcome. Ann Schaup, the Senior Advisor for Strategic Planning and Projects at Protect Our Care.
Yes. Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for having me here today to, you know, not really quite celebrate the Affordable Care Act because there's so much that we have to still fight for, but, you know, to talk about how far we've come.
So it's been 16 years, which means that people may not even remember what was like before the Affordable Care Act, or maybe they were too young to even have been buying their own health insurance back then. So to give people a refresher, what was insurance like before the ACA?
Yeah, it's crazy to believe how long it's been and how far we've come. And some of the protections that were put into place in the Affordable Care Act just kind of seem commonplace now. And we can't imagine a time before they were there. But, you know, prior to the ACA passing 16 years ago, people had a lot more problems, you know, getting coverage and getting the coverage they need, especially if they had a pre-existing condition. So a lot of protections were put into place that just made it a lot easier for people. Before, people would be concerned about losing their job or leaving a job, because when you changed insurance, your new insurance might not cover a pre-existing condition that you had. And so then say you had asthma, you know, it wouldn't cover your asthma medication. It wouldn't cover any complications, you know, due to that. And so it was a constant battle where really insurance companies were completely in charge in making the rules. There were yearly caps on how much coverage you could get, lifetime caps on coverage. So say you were someone with a complex medical needs, you could run out of insurance coverage partway through the year, or even lifetime coverage. Laura and I have worked with a lot of storytellers over the years who, you know, had kids with complex medical needs, and they, you know, had several life-saving surgeries in the first year of their care of their lives. And they, you know, immediately hit like lifetime caps in coverage. So it was very stressful. And, you know, so women were charged more, older people were charged more, people with pre-existing conditions didn't have these protections, you know, so the ACA did all these things. It also made, you know, a lot of preventative care available with, you know, for free, and that allowed people to get screenings for cancer and other things. So, you know, vaccines, it really did all these things that, you know, really helped people along the way and you know, allowed young people to stay on their parents' plan. And so while that, I know, you know, people might be listening to this that weren't aware of what it was like before the ACA, might be saying, well, hey, like healthcare is not great right now. I struggle, you know, getting the coverage I need, or I'm fighting with my insurance company. But, you know, it's hard to imagine, but 16 years ago, we were actually in a lot, you know, more difficult position, and the insurance companies were even more in charge. So the ACA did a lot for people.
Absolutely. And is personal for me because I used to have junk insurance before the Affordable Care Act. So if you go back to before 2014, which was the first year that I could enroll in the ACA, I had junk policies before then. And actually for me, for my situation, the cost of an ACA policy was about the same as my junk plan. It was not a significant difference. But I had the reassurance of knowing if something happened, they would actually pay for it. And after I was diagnosed with cancer, I actually did some Googling and I figured out that my junk insurance company was sued by cancer survivors and cancer patients' families because they refused to cover the treatments. So this word called rescission is when you actually got sick. That's when you would find out your policy would have their underwriters, their lawyers in a room going through your application line by line and figuring out where you put something wrong. And they would use that as an excuse to cancel your policy. So maybe you didn't mark down that you had acne as a teenager, or they would come up with any kind of ridiculous excuse to get out of paying for expensive care. So one of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act is that for the past decade or so, people don't have to worry about getting thrown off their policy just because they got sick. And that was a real thing that happened before. And now there's a whole generation of people that are alive to fight for the Affordable Care Act that maybe wouldn't be here before because they would have run out of money and they would have run out of treatment.
Yeah, it really gave people peace of mind. And think of how many people were able to move jobs, move cities, start their own small business, knowing that they could get the coverage that they needed. But, you know, unfortunately, we're in this position where everything is, again, we're always, instead of moving forward, we're fighting to protect what we have. And so, you know, a lot of people are being priced out of this coverage that is life-saving. And, you know, the Trump administration is pushing people towards these short-term plans that are more like the junk insurance that you had prior to the ACA, where, you know, it might not be there to cover you when you need it the most. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to be figuring that out when they go to, you know, try to use their coverage and it's, you know, not what they expected it to be.
So some people have complained that, you know, they used to be able to afford health insurance, but after the Affordable Care Act was passed, their insurance became unaffordable and they couldn't keep it anymore. But I think it's also important to point out that if we're talking about 14 years ago, everything was a lot cheaper. However, so some people may be looking with rose-colored glasses at those old junk insurance policies and not remembering how much it actually cost. But apart from that, there's a real problem with people not being able to afford their health insurance right now because of sabotage by this Congress and president, that when they were passing tax breaks for billionaires, they refused to extend the tax credits that made health insurance more affordable for middle-class families. Can you tell us what happened to the Affordable Care Act tax credits and what's going to happen?
Yeah. So unfortunately, a lot of people who purchase insurance on their own saw their premiums this past year double, triple, you know, even for some people, quadruple, kind of all dependent on who they were, how old they were, where they lived. But so, you know, because the insurance can be expensive, there were tax credits that were put into place that allowed people who purchased insurance on their own to have help to pay for their premiums. So they wouldn't be paying, you know, over a certain percentage of their salary on their income on insurance premiums. And as you said, those have been under attack in this past year, while the Republicans in Congress were, you know, cutting taxes for billionaires and extending those tax cuts, they did not they ended these tax credits for working families who purchase insurance on their own. So the end of the year, that means for a lot of people, again, they saw their premiums double, triple. So people had to make tough choices. And for some people, that meant going without coverage. And unfortunately, we're already seeing the numbers. Last year, the last year of the Biden administration, more people were covered than ever in this country. And, you know, again, instead of building on that success, we're moving backwards. So now we're seeing people lose coverage because they can no longer afford their premiums after their tax credits went away. We're already seeing 1 million, maybe 2 million people already pull back from their coverage. And then a lot of people are just, you know, struggling to make it work and finding other ways to make ends meet and, you know, tightening their belt in other places. But, you know, other people also went to different plans that weren't as generous. You know, they moved down to a bronze plan. And so that means they're going to have a higher deductible. And so it's going to be harder if they do need the insurance that you know, they'll be paying more out-of-pocket costs. So along with that and pushing people towards these junk plans, it really seems like the, you know, what the Trump administration is doing here is pushing people towards worse coverage that they're paying more for. And this is at a time that everybody's being squeezed, you know, with the grocery store, with their energy bills. And so, like, nobody can afford this right now. So people are making some tough choices.
And just to let folks know, in case they weren't aware, the big, beautiful bill, which passed last year by Republicans and President Trump, it had the tax breaks for billionaires. It did not include extending the tax credits for the Affordable Care Act. It also included $1 trillion worth of cuts to Medicaid, but those cuts don't take effect for another year. So all of the chaos we're seeing right now, the rising premiums for everybody, just because there's less support from the Affordable Care Act in the system, this is just the beginning. The Medicaid cuts haven't even hit yet. So as bad as it is right now, and personally, my insurance premiums went up 21% this year. But like Anne said, people are facing double, triple, more. It's going to get worse. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So unfortunately, this is just the beginning of the sabotage that we're seeing from Republicans on our healthcare. And like you said, $1 trillion cut from Medicaid. We're already starting to see the impacts of that, especially at hospitals, because hospitals have to, they're running on tight margins already, and they have to look into the future. And so if a lot of people are being cut off Medicaid, then that's going to affect their margins. And so they're already making cuts. We're seeing hospital closures. We're seeing, the hospitals cutting wards, clinics closing. They might cut their cancer care ward or a maternity ward, pediatrics. We have a hospital crisis watch. We have a tracker with a map that Protect Our Care that shows you all across the country where we're seeing either hospitals in, you know, at risk or hospitals that have closed. So, you know, that impacts everybody, not just people who are on Medicaid, especially in these rural communities. It could mean that people are traveling, you know, three hours for care. And imagine if there's an emergency or if, you know, someone's pregnant. And, you know, so it's really going to impact everybody, no matter where you get your coverage. And, you know, this is just the beginning. When we see these cuts actually take effect, and more, we expect, you know, in the Congressional Budget Office estimated that millions and millions of people will lose coverage. So, you know, you can't take $1 trillion out of our healthcare system without having massive impacts and massive downstream effects. So states are going to have to raise taxes and you know, find other ways to bridge the gap for some of these things. But, you know, unfortunately, just like a lot of people are going to lose their healthcare coverage. And again, instead of moving forward and trying to fix the problems with our healthcare system, you know, we're just trying to push back on these devastating cuts.
Agreed. And just to emphasize, this is about choices, and Congress did not have to cut $1 trillion from our healthcare system. They chose to do that, just like our government is choosing to spend billions of dollars overseas wars. Again, choices. In the richest country in the world, we could make different and better choices on where we're spending our money. So, and for everybody listening and watching that's concerned about their healthcare, what can or should we be doing right now?
Yeah, you know, you can always be reaching out and pushing your members of Congress on this. You know, it did have some impact in the fight that we saw over the tax credits and, you know, the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Unfortunately, you know, we have leadership in Congress that is aligning themselves with Trump. But there's, you know, the tax credits had a bipartisan majority support in the House and the Senate. And yet, you know, there were just a handful of people, including Leader Mike Johnson and Leader John Thune, that were listening to Trump and you know, not bringing that bill to the floor. Well, it passed in the House. It didn't pass in the Senate because Thune was able to kill it because it needed 60 votes. So, you know, if members are afraid of this vote because this is very unpopular, and so if they hear from you, then they'll get nervous and they'll push their leadership. And so this is the type of thing that that, you know, we can put pressure on. We came very close to being able to do it, but you know, we just, you know, need a little more oomph there. But it does matter to talk to your member of Congress on these issues. And you know, they're starting to see the impacts. I think that they're kind of afraid of how unpopular their healthcare positions are. People really wanted these tax credits. People really want to have Medicaid be funded. So it's important that they keep hearing from you on this, and that they know that if they are not, you know, protecting these programs and funding them, that they're going to be held accountable. So that's the best thing that we can do. And, you know, just keep pressuring them and to hold them accountable for their cuts to healthcare.
Thank you, Anne. As we've both pointed out, this is about choices. Congress could choose better, so they need to hear from you.
Well, thanks so much for having me today, Laura. It's always so great to talk to you.
So for everybody at home, just a reminder, we have free or low-cost healthcare resources available on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalks. So check it out. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. Welcome to Diane Archer, the founder and president of Just Care USA and senior advisor on Medicare at Social Security Works, and Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org. So let's start with Diane, who has some news about a new Gallup poll and things we could be doing to make Medicare more affordable.
Yes. So if only Congress were moved by reason and logic, we have lots of good facts behind our case for the ACA subsidies and for strengthening Medicare. And the most recent is a Gallup poll showing that even people at higher income levels, people earning more than $240,000 a year, are making trade-offs in order to get healthcare. And what they have to do is give up on groceries, on rent, on electric, in order to pay for their healthcare. It's gotten that bad. Healthcare has become so expensive. And what's crazy to me, and again, reason and logic, if it only would prevail, is that traditional Medicare, which is administered directly by the federal government and which allows people to get their care at almost any physician site or hospital across the country, is incredibly cost effective. It's much more cost effective than private insurance. but Congress has not been paying attention to keeping it strong. And unfortunately, it has become unaffordable to tons of people over 65 and with disabilities who should be able to enroll in it. And instead, they have no choice but to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan because a Medicare Advantage plan has an out-of-pocket cap protecting them financially, and traditional Medicare does not. And here, let me just pause to say that traditional Medicare is the only insurance out there that lacks a catastrophic cap, meaning that at some point, your costs stop and the insurer takes over the spending. And so we have brought together 33 policy experts to write to Congress to say, as a very top priority, you should be focused on giving traditional Medicare an out-of-pocket limit. Right now, traditional Medicare is an option only for wealthy people because supplemental coverage, which can protect you financially, is often either unavailable because the insurers don't have to sell it to you, or it's unaffordable because the premiums can be easily $2,000 a year or even significantly higher than that. So people can't get from Medicare Advantage to traditional Medicare without assuming a lot of financial risk. And that's something that few people want to take on. At the same time, what we're seeing in Medicare Advantage are people in the rural communities, as you were talking about before, who can't get care anywhere near their homes. Their hospitals have closed. And they need to, or their rehabilitation facilities are not there. So they're traveling as much as 70 miles to get care, which is just really, really hard and can compromise their health in Medicare Advantage. Or they're diagnosed with cancer and they want to go to a cancer center of excellence and their Medicare Advantage plan won't cover it. Or they're moving around the country and their Medicare Advantage plan will only cover their care in one particular area, so they can't get care when they're staying with their son or their sister or someplace out of their immediate home area, which is the only place their Medicare Advantage plan will cover them. And on top of that, doctors are leaving Medicare Advantage and Medicare Advantage plans are leaving the Medicare Advantage program. So this year, 2.9 million people lost their Medicare Advantage coverage. And they needed new coverage. And of course, lots of them want continuity of care. They need continuity of care. And the best way to guarantee that to them, again, is through traditional Medicare. But without an out-of-pocket cap, they take a big risk enrolling and they end up being trapped in Medicare Advantage. So right now we have members of Congress and we're hoping for a bipartisan group of members of Congress to support an out-of-pocket cap in Medicare. It will bring down costs for everybody in Medicare. And if you do want supplemental coverage, it will cost less. You won't need to buy supplemental coverage because you'll have that catastrophic protection. And you'll also have guaranteed access to doctors and hospitals across the country and coverage for that without the prior authorization requirements that are part and parcel of being in a Medicare Advantage plan and having a corporate insurer overseeing your care. So fingers crossed, reason and logic should prevail. Talk to your members of Congress, explain to them why an out-of-pocket cap in traditional Medicare is a smart way to go. And maybe down the road, we'll get it.
Thank you, Diane. And here's hoping. Our next question is from Amy the Wine Lady from Reddit, who says that she got a large bill for going to her primary care doc. She called Anthem, the insurer, repeatedly, telling them the doctor shows up as in-network on the insurance website, and the practice said that they still take that insurance. So why is she being billed out of network? And the insurance people just keep repeating the website is not always accurate, etc. Louise.
So So unfortunately, it is not uncommon for provider network directories to be inaccurate, whether they're out of date because they do change, you know, the providers who are in network change over time, or just inaccurate altogether. And it's also somewhat common for like the front desk staff at a medical office to not be able to definitively tell you whether your specific policy is accepted. And part of that is, you know, it's complicated. There are, like in this case, it's Anthem, but there are lots of different types of Anthem policies. There are Anthem large group policies, small group policies, individual market policies. They'll oftentimes have different provider networks. So it isn't just straightforward as asking, you know, do you take Anthem? It's much more complicated than that. My best advice for a situation like this, where it sounds like both the provider and the insurer are sort of kicking the can back and forth to each other, is to set up a three-way call where you know, start by calling your provider's office. And then while they're still on the phone, you loop in the health plan. Once everybody's on the call together, it's much harder for those two entities to just keep sort of pointing the finger to the other one. They kind of have to sort something out, dig a little deeper. It's certainly not something that for sure would get resolved in one call. They may have to keep looking into it. But once you get everybody on a call together, you improve your chances of at least someone explaining, clarifying for sure what is going on. So that's my best piece of advice there.
Thank you, Louise. Next, open enrollment for Medicare Advantage is almost over. It ends March 31st at the end of the month. Diane, what should people be doing right now before March 31st?
Okay, they should be looking at their Medicare Advantage plan options. They should be looking closely at what they have and also thinking about moving into traditional Medicare. Picking up on what Louise was saying, her advice of bringing in all these different parties to figure out who's responsible for what. In traditional Medicare, you don't have that. When you're in traditional Medicare, the doctor will tell you if he or she is not taking Medicare. Those doctors are few and far between. Almost every doctor, almost every hospital does. And so again, you're not in the middle of all these administrative hassles. So look at your Medicare Advantage plan. Remember that your doctors can leave. Doctors who you think are in the network might not be. As Louise explained, sometimes the directory says a doctor is in the network and the doctor has left the network. Sometimes the doctor doesn't realize he or she is in the network and says they're not in the network, even though they are, and you're lost. You can't get the appointment that you need. In traditional Medicare, again, you get it. You're gambling in Medicare Advantage that you'll be able to see the doctors, use the hospitals that you want to use, and get your insurer to actually pay for your care when you need it. In Medicare Advantage, there's a high rate of inappropriate delays and denials of care. In traditional Medicare, if your doctor says your care is medically necessary, in most instances, Medicare will pay for your care. So there are lots of reasons to move into traditional Medicare. The only issue is you will need supplemental coverage to protect yourself from financial risk, and that can be expensive. But there are some lower cost, high deductible Medicare supplemental insurance policies. Look at those, see if you can get one of those. And if you are at all concerned about getting care when you need it, look carefully at switching in the next week to traditional Medicare.
Thanks, Diane. And for Louise, the soup hot on Reddit says that my husband and I have both been on marketplace insurance for years. He turns 65 at the end of the year, so he'll be eligible for Medicare. Will I still qualify for marketplace insurance since I won't be eligible for Medicare for about 4 or 5 years? So what happens with a couple when one is eligible for Medicare and one is not?
Sure. So yes, you can continue your marketplace coverage. The specifics of how you do that will vary depending on what state you're in and whether you or your spouse is listed as the primary insured. One of you is the primary and one is the spouse. If and so they may have to start you on a new policy if you were the dependent and you're the primary policyholders moving off to Medicare, or they might just be removing the dependent spouse and keeping you on your policy. So you do need to contact the marketplace and have a conversation with them about exactly, you know, what needs to happen to make it so that just you continue to be covered on that policy after your spouse moves to Medicare. But the bigger question has to do with subsidies. And marketplace subsidies can be really counterintuitive for people when you have a situation like this. People will tend to assume that when their spouse moves on to Medicare, that they will pay less for just themselves on the marketplace. That's only true if you weren't getting a subsidy. If you're paying full price for your marketplace plan, then yes, taking your spouse off the policy will significantly reduce your premium because you'll only be paying full price for yourself. But most marketplace enrollees are getting a subsidy, and this is especially true for folks who are approaching Medicare age just because premiums are so high for that group, so they tend to qualify for subsidies. The way the marketplace subsidies work is they look at your total household income relative to your total tax household, and you are not allowed to get a subsidy if you file separately if you're married. So a married couple does have to file jointly. So you are a tax household of two. There would actually be a bigger tax household if you still have kids who are your tax dependents, but assuming it's just you and your spouse, you continue to be a tax household of two, and you continue to have to use your total household income. And the subsidy is based on keeping your marketplace plan, just for your what you pay for marketplace, not counting what you pay for Medicare, at a certain percentage of your household income. And that's on a sliding scale, depending on what you actually earn. So if you are getting a subsidy and your spouse moves to Medicare, in most cases, you will either pay the same amount that you were paying before just to keep yourself covered, or you might actually pay more, because what's going to happen is your subsidy is going to get less. The amount you pay is not going to get less. And just to give you an example, I looked at Orlando. If you're a married couple, one of you is 60 and one is 64. Let's say you're earning $60,000 a year between the two of you. You currently, with the two of you on the policy, you can get a policy as low as $0 a month. If that once that 64-year-old turns 65 and you're left with just the one younger spouse on the policy, same household income, your lowest cost policy jumps up to $93 a month. So that is super counterintuitive to people. If you're assuming that your prices are going to go down when your spouse moves to Medicare, just be prepared for the fact that if you're getting a subsidy, that will not actually be the case.
Thanks, Louise. And I guess there's nothing you can do about it because you can't not turn 65. So
right.
It is what it is.
If your household income goes down, which that, like if your spouse, you know, actively retires and stops earning an income and your household income drops, then, you know, your subsidy could get bigger. Your price that you're paying might go down. But assuming your household income doesn't change, that is what you're looking at.
Thanks. And now, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us to learn more about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America. Be sure to check out more free or low-cost healthcare resources on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.